Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, we've done a lot of talk about the election, and you know, now we're transitioning to a lot of conversations about, you know, what DC is going to look like once we go into the new year and President-elect Donald Trump takes over, and what it means for Connecticut, what it means for the country. And we try to get as many perspectives as possible. We'll talk with Chair of the Republican Party here in Connecticut, Ben Proto, at 8 o'clock. Right now, I want to welcome in Congressman Joe Courtney from the 2nd District. Congressman Courtney, good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
I don't know. Have I talked to you since the election? I don't think I have, right?
No, you were. Okay. We were still at the breakfast truck.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I left you.
Well, congratulations on earning another term. You know, obviously, I know you don't take that for granted. You know, we've done a lot of postmortems. I've talked to a lot of Democrats about, you know, what the party needs to do and in their opinion, both, you know, nationally and in the state. I thought maybe, you know, you can chime in on whatever you want, but I thought maybe we could look a little bit, you know, down the road.
Sure.
What you expect, you know, when we have this transition, whether you think that these nominations are a clear sign that there's going to be some sort of push to circumvent the Senate and do recess appointments. I just don't know if you had any general thoughts. I want to let you sort of have the conch and say what you want.
Sure. So, I mean, one thing that anyone who's been following the House, you know, the last two House seats in California, the 13th, and the I forget the other name, but anyway, the you know, the ballots are going to be finalized on December 2nd, and it looks like there are two seats that are going to flip to the Democrats. So the House margin actually is going to be at least the same, if not smaller, for Speaker Johnson when all is said and done, which was pretty razor thin to begin with. So you know, again, in the committees which I serve, on House Armed Services Committee, I mean, I think we function very well with that margin, and Connecticut fared well in terms of the national defense bills that came through our committee. And you know, the Appropriations Committee is going to be similarly, you know, close in terms of just the margins that are there. You know, I personally feel that down the road, there's going to be junctures where we have to raise the debt limit again. We have to, you know, fund the government. We have to pass bills like NDAA and the Farm Bill, where you know, the math simply says that you know, if we're going to get a bill passed and to President Trump's desk, we're going to have to, you know, reach across the aisle. It's like I said, it's just math.
Right.
In terms of, you know, what's going on in the Senate, I mean, I'm sort of stunned at some of these appointments, like many other people. Having said that, if you look at the batting average in terms of the Senate actually rejecting by vote nominees, you have to go back to John Tower in the Bush administration, which was the defense secretary nomination from Texas that was rejected by the Senate. So it is very rare that by vote, you know, that the Senate actually, as I said, rejects, you know, some are withdrawn you know, because of the furor that surrounds some of the, you know, the research and news reporting and whatnot of the nominees. And that could happen, I think, particularly with Gates. I mean, I do think that the House Ethics Report is going to find its way into the public realm. I don't know exactly how.
It's going to get leaked. I mean, I've already seen stuff come out. So anyway,
right.
You know, I wanted to, you know, the interesting thing, you know, about that, some people think that, you know, like a Gates nomination is sort of cover for the other ones that would be maybe really controversial, seem less so. So there's less controversy about some of the other ones.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, you know, flooding the zone, as they say, you know, I think is a tactic which the Trump administration did with judicial nominations in the first term. And, you know, again, there were some really egregious candidates who had absolutely no experience in a courtroom and you know, who were rejected. But by and large, he got, you know, 90%, if not higher, of the judicial nominations that he was looking for. So, you know, I think that, you know, the political capital that may be required to reject a nominee like Gates could pretty much exhaust, you know, within his own party in terms of these folks.
You know, we're talking with Representative Joe Courtney here on Brian and Company. You know, there's a couple of forces that seem to be, you know, pushing against each other. There's this concept of really reducing, you know, whether it's waste, fraud, and abuse, or just reducing headcount federally. And also, like, they want to cut spending, but Trump is a big believer in a strong military. And I'm curious of what you think based on, you know, they want to reduce the overhead in government, but defense is obviously a priority. What do you think this means for, like, the Connecticut defense industry?
So, I mean, I think Connecticut makes what the Congress and the Pentagon want right now. I mean, if you look at the three sort of pillars of platforms that are being built in our state, which is submarines, both Columbia and Virginia, the F-35 engines, which is the fifth-generation fighter jets that not only are in high demand by the Air Force and the Navy, but also by our allies, and you know, who've signed major contracts for that program. And lastly, the 53K heavy lift helicopter, which the Marine Corps can't get them fast enough in you know, large enough quantities. So, you know, I'm actually pretty confident that in terms of the contracts and the work, it's going to keep coming. And you know, there's definitely production delivery issues that, you know, are raising lots of concerns, but frankly, that's not unique to Connecticut. And actually, I think Connecticut's doing better in terms of workforce development than other parts of the country. So you know, I'm not really you know, of the mind that somehow Connecticut's going to get targeted because it didn't vote for Trump in terms of defense contracts, because there's nowhere else to go, you know, in terms of, you know, building submarines or building those engines, which are the best. And the same with the 53K helicopter.
We're talking with Congressman Joe Courtney, 2nd District here on Brian and Company. We only have like a minute. You know, you mentioned in something I read, you have a quote about how difficult it is to work in the minority, but you talked about some of your committee work, you know, seems to trend toward bipartisanship. You know, productivity in the House must be incredibly frustrating. Being in the minority is difficult. Can, you know, in terms of like, how does it manifest itself, like with the inability to do certain things and just being in the minority in general, which is what this will be the second or third term in a row.
The majority of the time I've been in Congress, we've been in the minority. The House rules and the Senate rules are different. I mean, the House, basically everything goes through the Rules Committee for amendments, floor debate, what bills get taken up. And, you know, you have your sort of minor victories here and there in terms of, you know, specific items that you want to see debated and voted on. The Senate, the minority, they have much more power because of the, again, the rules are much more protective of every senator that's there, and they jealously guard those protections that are there. So, you know, really, again, Armed Services is the unicorn because, you know, it just has a long bipartisan history. We passed 63 straight NDAAs, and we're I'm going to a meeting shortly to get the 64th ready for vote sometime later this month. Education and workforce, unfortunately, is just a much more partisan committee, like most of them, and it is frustrating. I mean, and again, these are not issues that really should be separating people that I would like to see move.
Yep.
And but you know, it is what it is.
Congressman, good luck. We look forward to catching up with you probably after the holidays, and if we don't talk to you before then, enjoy Thanksgiving and the rest of the holidays.
You too, Brian. Thanks for the call.
All right.